Dusty swings the first pitch and starts to run it out, but it's foul. Attaboy, Dusty, that's hustling. He hit that ball. All he knew was he hit it. He wasn't stopping to see where it was. He was running it out. He's very fast. And by not wasting any time that way, he stood a chance of beating it out if the ball was fair. Rolled. Oh, now he gets back to the plate again. These ball players that stop and look that get thrown out so many times, and Cook is on the go. He wants to get there. You can always come back, but you can't get down there if you wait too long to start. He hits the next one. It's another foul down the left field line, going back into the seats. Radcliffe comes across, but it's well back in the seats for strike two. Two strikes on Cook. And he swings again, hit a line drive down the left field line, and a curve's foul. Lands foul by a foot. Boy, how he was running. He was around first base and on his way to second when that ball finally landed, but it was fouled by at least a foot down there, and it's still two strikes on Cook as he walks slowly back to the plate again. Waits out there once more. Starts to wind up. And throws, and the hitter takes a strike. Oh, it's a ball. I called that one too soon. The umpire hadn't called it yet, but apparently it was just too low. The umpire, or rather the catcher, thought at first it was good, but it wasn't. He hits the next one, a bounder out back to second base. Hayes gets it there, and the runner just barely beats the ball to first base. You know, he's very, very fast. It was a slow hopper over the pitcher's head. Hayes got it out back at second base and through to first. And Cook beat it out on a very, very close play at first base. Umpire Hubbard was bent right over the play. Cook, a very fast man, hit that bag just an eyelash ahead of the ball. And, George, you don't need to pull an eyelash out today to show me how close that is like you did yesterday either. So Cook is on first base. With one out of the third inning, and Kramer, Roger Kramer is at bat. And the first pitch is a strike over the heart of the plate down around the knee. One strike on Kramer. King watches first base, gets ready again. As he signs. And pitches, and the hitter fouls this one right back toward us and lands down here in front of us amongst the fans. And it's two strikes on Kramer. Two strikes to count. Kane is ready once more, takes another look at first base, throws. And the hitter hits the ball hard. Appling can't get it. It goes through in the center field for a base hit. Cook is around second on his way to third. And Kravitz gets the ball and throws it wisely into second base. If he'd thrown to third, the other runner might have gotten to second, and he had no chance of getting Cook. That was another bounder, but it was just barely out of reach of Appling. Cook almost got it, but not quite. And so now the Red Sox have runners on first and third, with only one out in the third inning. And Heidi Manush, another dangerous hitter, is up there at the plate. Husky, left-handed swinger. Kane ready to pitch to Heine. Throws. He swings it, a bounder down to Hayes, who got the throw to Appling. Appling throws the first, and it's a save at first base. Appling's throw pulled Bonura off the bag. Is out all right at second, and a run scores because Appling's throw to first, which, if it was good, would have gotten the man, was high, and as a result, the runner got the first base and a run scores. Kramer gets up and dusts himself, starts back to the bench. I think probably the throw was bad mainly because Kramer went into second base so very hard that Appling was thrown way off stride, and the play was close enough so that Bonura, in leaving the base by only about a foot, couldn't get back to it before Manush hit the bag, and Cook scores a run that makes the score 2-1 in favor of the White Sox. And Fox at bat swings the first one, fouls it back onto the roof of the stand, bounds down back of it. And it's one strike. he's trying again to pitch to Jimmy Fox. Throws, and Jim swings in a hard bounder down to Dykes, who gets it nicely. Throws the first, and Fox is out for the third out. So it's three out, one run, two hits, one man left on base. In the first half of the third inning, the White Sox come to bat in the last half of the third inning, leading the Red Sox by a score of 2-1. First White Sox hitter will be the head of the batting order, Rip Radcliffe. This broadcast, the White Sox-Boston doubleheader, comes to you direct from Comiskey Park, home of the White Sox in Chicago, as a presentation of your neighborhood Texaco dealer, distributor of Texaco Fire Chief Gasoline. This broadcast comes with the permission of the White Sox and Red Sox to stimulate interest in our national game and in your own local baseball team. This is WCFL at Chicago. After that inning was over, Luke Sewell stood there talking to umpire Armsby at the plate about something. Don't know what. He was making lots of gestures with his hands, not as though he was in a violent disagreement about anything, but though he was making some discussion at some point, and finally turned and sauntered on back to the bench. And Radcliffe, stocky little left-handed hitter, steps up there to the plate, starts the last half of the third inning. And the first pitch is a curveball that misses the outside corner across the way of knees for ball one. Russell winds up again, pitches, and Radcliffe swings to hit a hard bound to right straight at Kroner, the second baseman, who throws him out at first, although the throw is pretty high, and Fox had to end up reaching for it. So it's one out in the third inning for the White Sox, and Mike Krivich, White Sox center fielder, is at bat. Another chunky little fellow, a right-handed batsman. Winds up the pitch, first one to Mike throws, and he takes it high and inside for ball one. One ball called. Throws again, and Krivich swings and hits a hard bounder right back at the pitcher, who fields it with his glove hand, throws to first, and it's two out in the third inning. So far, he's managed to get rid of the boys up at the front end of the batting order all right. So it's two out in the third inning for the Sox. And Mule Haas, White Sox, the right fielder, is up there at the plate. Haas at bat. Winds up, throws, and the Mule swings in a high fly into left field. Shortstop, third baseman dashing back, right fielder coming in. The ball lands and bounds away from him. And the runner pulls up at second base. And Werber backs up to cover third. Russell also coming over there. That's what you call a Texaco leaguer. No Texas leaguers anymore in this broadcast. They're all Texaco leaguers. A little pop fly down back of third base. Landed down there about 50 feet beyond the base, maybe 60. And just about 8 inches inside the foul line. And it drops for a two-base hit. Texas leaguers anymore in this broadcast. They're all Texaco leaguers. A little pop fly down back of third base, landed down there about 50 feet beyond the base, maybe 60, and just about 8 inches inside the foul line, and it's out for a two-base hit, putting Haas on second base with two out in the third inning, and Fanura. Zeke Fanura is at bat. Waits out there, gets ready to pitch the first one to Zeke. Throws, and he leans back to take a high one inside for ball one. One ball called. Russell walks slowly back onto the slab again. Takes another look back at second, then pitches, and Zeke jumps back to take the second ball inside and low. And so it's 2-0. Two balls and no strikes. Got first base vacant there, so it's a pretty sure shot that he's not going to give Zeke anything good to hit at if he can help it. Suddenly the pitcher decides he wants another ball, asks for it, gets it from the umpire. He takes this one from the catcher, looks it over, sticks it back in his pocket. Can't find anything wrong with it. 2-0, two balls and no strike. And Russell throws again for ball three, high and wide, making it three balls and no strikes on Fanura. Three and nothing to count. They decide to throw that fourth one wide anyway. And so they do, and he gets a base on balls. Only the fourth pitch was intentionally wide. But as before, as I said, the first pitches, they would rather give him bad balls and fill first base than take a chance on giving him a good ball to hit. He hit a home run in the second inning. And now Luke Appling is up there at the plate. Appling at bat. Russell leans way over to get his time. Back at second base where the shortstop is worrying the runner. And then pitches a curveball wide for ball one. One ball called. Pitch is ready out there again. Throws, and Luke jumps back to take ball two. It's inside across the waist. And it's 2-0. 2 balls and no strikes on Appling. 2-0 to count. Huckle walks back, drives his fingers on the rosin bag again, comes slowly back onto the slab. And they're watching the plate. Pitch is ready once more. Throws, and the hitter takes the third ball. It's inside, and it makes it 3-0. 3 balls and no strike on Appling. So the Red Sox again start that pitcher warming up in the bullpen. Russell throws again, and it's strike one, and barely catches the inside corner across the waist. And the count is 3 balls and 1 strike on Appling. 3-1. Pitcher walks slowly back to talk to Cronin.
Well, how do you do, Ernie?
So you're here in time. Now suddenly Cronin comes in to talk to the catcher and pitcher. Croner also comes in there, and two base umpires are there also in the discussion. Just what it is, I don't know. There doesn't seem to be any argument of any sort. The discussion seems to be chiefly between pitcher and catcher, but Cronin got in on it. Three and one is the count. 3 balls and 1 strike. Now there comes ball four, a wide one. Appling gets the base on balls, and it fills the bases. With two out in the third inning, and Hayes, Jackie Hayes at bat. Base is full. Two out. Jackie Hayes at bat. Taking quite a time to pitch this first one. Pitcher finally starts to wind up, throws, and Jackie jumps back with the balls over the inside corner waist high for a strike. 1 strike on Hayes. Russell still watching the catcher for his sign. Finally has it again. He's winding up. Slowly pitches. Hayes swings, hit a slow bounder, but it's fouled to the left of the plate, and it's strike two. That makes it 2 strikes on Jackie Hayes. White Sox, remember, have the bases full in the third inning with 2 out. White Sox are leading the Red Sox 2-1. Seems every sign again, getting another ball, getting it all rubbed up. And finally starts his windup. He throws, and it's a high one. It's over the plate, but too high, and it's ball one. Make the count 1 ball and 2 strikes on Hayes. 1-2 the count. Throws again, and Jackie swings and misses a high fastball inside, striking out and he's so peeved that he slams the bat on the ground afterwards. But Russell, pitching nicely, struck him out to end that inning without anybody scoring, although the Sox had filled the bases with two outs. No runs, one hit, three men left on base in the last half of the third inning, and the score is still 2-1 in favor of the White Sox at the end of the third inning. And now, for up-to-the-minute scores and complete batteries from other cities, we return to the studio.
League in Boston at the end of the eighth inning, the Chicago Cubs. At the end of the first half of the eighth inning, the Cubs are leading the Boston Bees by a score of 2-0. Leon Hartnett working for the Cubs, the Bees using McFadden and Lopez. In Philadelphia, the Cardinals are leading the Phillies at the end of the fifth inning by a score of 8-2. Haynes and Davis working for the Cards, the Phillies using Walters and Wilson to start, with Jorgens on the mound in the third and Sivas in the fifth. In Brooklyn, the Cincinnati Reds lead the Dodgers at the end of the first half of the fifth inning, 4-0. Dinah Lombardi starting for the Reds with Fry on the mound in the first. Mungo and Berry is the battery for the Dodgers. In New York, the battery for the Pittsburgh Pirates, Swift and Patton, for the Giants, Hubble and Mancuso. In the American League, none of the other games have started, with the exception of the game to which you're listening from Comiskey Park, in which the White Sox lead the Red Sox 2-1. And now back to Comiskey Park and Hal Tutton. Take it, Hal.
First man at bat in the fourth inning for the Red Sox is Croner, and he hits the first ball, an easy bunt right back at Kane, who gets it, throws the first, and it's one out of the fourth inning. One out of the fourth inning for the Red Sox. And Cronin, Joe Cronin, the Boston captain, or rather manager, and shortstop is at bat. Takes a look around, gets ready now to pitch the first one to Cronin. Starts his windup, throws, and it's a strike over the heart of the plate, about knee high. One strike on Cronin. Pitcher again starts to wind up, throws, and Joe swings it, a long fly to left field, but Radcliffe's waiting there and makes the catch nicely for the second out. Long, low fly to Radcliffe in left field, and it's two out in the fourth inning for the Red Sox, with Bill Werber, the Boston third baseman, at bat. Werber finally gets up there at the plate. Kane smooths down the dirt a little bit in front of the slab. Now starts his windup and throws, and the hitter drags the bunt down towards third base. Dykes comes in fast, got to throw the first, and on a very pretty play, Werber is out for the third out. Dykes really fielded that ball beautifully there. Came in hard, scooped it up, and threw to first, getting the very fast Mr. Werber for the third out. So it's no runs, no hits in the fourth inning for the Red Sox. And the White Sox still lead the Red Sox by a score of 2-1 as the White Sox come to bat in the last half of the fourth inning, with Jimmy Dykes, Mr. Manager, the first man at bat. Russell down here was going out onto the mound, but suddenly decides to wait for Bird coming out of the dugout, and then walks up toward the infield talking to Moe. Finally walks out into the infield, and we'll start his warm-up in just a moment. Have a wire here, unsigned. But still, it's a good question. Wants to know what happened to the White Sox coach, Austin. There's a name given in the wire is Billy Austin, but it's Jimmy Austin, as we all know. Jimmy is still retained as a member of the Sox crew, although off the roster this year, although I notice he's still shown on the scorebook. But Jimmy Austin's wife was very, very ill this spring, and Jimmy felt that he was going to have to resign and stay out there on the Pacific Coast with her during her illness. Well, the ball club naturally gave him leave of absence, and he's out there on the Pacific Coast with Mrs. Webb. And the other day, Jimmy Dykes got a very nice letter from Austin, complimenting him on the way the club was going. Dykes hits the first ball pitch very hard, and Werber goes out to make a corking play to grab it and throw to first, and listen to the applause he's getting. Werber dashed to his left and back, caught the ball in a bad position, and then got control of it and threw Dykes out at first on a very pretty play. So it's one out in the fourth inning for the White Sox, and Sewell is at bat. Luke takes the first one for a strike over the outside corner, waist high. One strike is the count on Luke Sewell. Bat with one out of the fourth inning for the White Sox. And Luke twists away and just barely misses getting hit by the next one. It almost brushed the back of his shirt as he twisted away from the plate and takes it inside for ball one. The count is 1-1, one ball and one strike on Sewell. Sewell again is winding up, throws, and Sewell takes a ball wide and low, and it's two balls and one strike on Luke. 2-1. Again starts the wind-up, throws, and it's a strike over the outside corner about knee-high, making it two balls and two strikes on Sewell. 2-2. Swings to the next hit, a bounder down toward third base. Werber makes a fine play to even stop the ball back at third base, but he can't handle it, and it goes as a base hit with the runner getting to first base safely. Ball was hard hit down the line. Werber this time went back into his right and knocked the ball down, but couldn't quite control it in time to get Sewell at first base. It was a hard try, and Werber almost made his second spectacular play on two batted balls. Couldn't quite handle that one, so it's a base hit. And now Kane at bat reaches out and bunts the first one. Russell goes out and gets it, throws the ball into the dirt at first base, and the runner is called safe. I believe the ball bounded into Cronin's hand in time to force Sewell, and he doesn't make any complaint about it. The throw by Russell was a bad throw, hitting the dirt in front of the bag, but Sewell sliding in got in there just after the ball caromed into Cronin's glove and stuck there. But Cronin had to reach way out to take it off the ground. A rather nice play to get it. So it's two out in the fourth inning. Kane is now on first base. And Rip Radcliffe is at bat. He throws and the Ripper takes a wide one across the knees for ball one. One ball called. Suddenly the pitcher looking at the ball doesn't like it, so he rolls it on into the plate when umpire Ormsby immediately calls time and starts reaching in his pocket for another one to throw out to the pitcher. But Emmett still finds nothing wrong with that ball. Goes back into his pocket, and Russell stands there getting ready to pitch the next one to Radcliffe, who has a count of one ball. Goes again, and the Ripper almost went for a wide one, but let it go by wide for ball two, making it 2-0, two balls and no strike on Radcliffe. Kane on first base, two out in the fourth inning. White Sox leading Boston 2-1. Throws again, and it's a ball over the, missed the outside corner. Seemed to be a little high also. And it's 3-0. Three balls and no strike. Throws once again for ball four, wide across the chest. And Radcliffe gets the base on ball. Came on first base, moves Kane to second base. And the White Sox have runners on first and second with two out in the fourth inning. And Mike Krivich, White Sox center fielder again, steps up to the plate. Krivich at bat. Watch the back at second and throws. And Mike takes a strike over the inside corner, waist high. One strike on Krivich. Ready out there again. Throws, and the hitter swings to miss a high fastball inside for strike two. That makes it two strikes on Krivich. Two strikes to count. Here again, heavy sign. Throws. And it's ball one, high and inside, so the count is one ball and two strikes on powerful little Mike. 1-2. White Sox runners on first and second, two out in the fourth inning. White Sox leading Boston 2-1. Russell is ready to pitch again. Pitches, Krivich swings and misses a curveball wide, striking out for the third out. Russell really got something there in that clinch. That's twice now and with men on base and things looking bad. He's flipped that third strike over, but he gets them. Usually swinging. He got Hayes swinging with the bases full in the third, and he got Krivich swinging this time. So the count of that inning, no runs, one hit, two men left on base. And the score, he is still 2-1 in favor of the White Sox at the end of the fourth inning. The operator of your neighborhood Texaco service station is a real lubrication expert. Ask him to show you how to end squeaks, rattles, and hard riding in your car with Marfac. You'll see why oily, clinging Marfac will stay in the bearings twice as long as ordinary grease and protects your car against needless wear and tear. Kane is out there finishing his warm-up with Luke Sewell, who now throws the ball on the hop out to second base. Mo Berg, the Boston pitcher, catching staff at present, with Rick Farrell out with the nubbed thumb, is walking up there to bat. Kane starts to wind up throws, and Berg swings and misses a slow curve for strike one. Swung himself clear around that time. One strike on Berg. And the pitcher winds up once more. Throws, and Mo swings hit a bounder down to Jimmy Dykes, but it's fouled. Jimmy comes over, knocks it down barehanded, and scoops it up, throws it back. Kane, so it's two strikes. Two strikes to count. Once again, the pitcher starts to wind up, throws, and Berg swings, hit a bounder out to the left of Appling and into left center for a base hit. Appling couldn't get over to it, and it puts Berg on first base. Nobody out in the fifth inning for the Red Sox. And Russell is at bat. Jack Russell, the pitcher, walking up there. First base, the hitter comes in and bunts one, and then Dykes comes in, catches it on the line, throws to Hayes at first, and it's a double play. Russell tried to sacrifice, but he bunted a little looping line drive out to Jimmy Dykes, who was racing in fast. Berg was on to go to second base, and so Hayes just dashed over and took Dykes' throw at first base to complete a double play and make it two outs here in the fifth inning, with Dusty Cook at bat. He throws the first one. It's inside across the waist for ball one. One ball called on Cook. Kane again winding up. Throws, and the hitter also tries to bunt, but that goes foul. Well out to the left of the plate, and it's 1-1. One ball and one strike. Naturally, with a fellow as fast as Cook there and a good bunter, was eager to get on base, especially so why Dykes is playing in pretty close before the count runs two strikes. Kane throws again, and the hitter hits a foul into the stands, back under the second deck above and third base, or back of it, and it's still 1-2. One ball and two strikes on Cook. Suddenly, umpire Ormsby calls Herb Pinnock in from first base coaching line. Herb says something to him. I don't know what. They have a little discussion, and Herb slowly walks back toward the coaching line. Drives back there. It's 1-2, one ball and two strikes. Kane throws again, and it's ball two, inside and low on the count. It's two balls and two strikes on Cook. 2-2 the count. He swings again and tips the ball foul into the catcher's glove, striking out for the third out. Sewell started to throw the ball back to pitcher's mound, but then decided to stop and look at it and see whether it was all right for use. And so the umpire reaches out his hand, takes it and walks into the infield to examine it himself, and then throws it out to the box to wait for Russell to get out there to warm up with it. No runs, one hit, in the fifth inning for the Red Sox, and the score still stands 2-1 in favor of the White Sox. White Sox have battled in the last half of the fifth inning with Mulehaus, the first White Sox hitter. The broadcast of the White Sox Boston doubleheader comes to you direct from Comiskey Park, home of the White Sox Chicago, as a presentation of your neighborhood Texaco dealer, distributor of Texaco Fire Chief Gasoline. The broadcast comes with the permission of the White Sox and the Red Sox to stimulate interest in our national game and in your own local baseball team. This is WCFL at Chicago. Russell has finished his warm-up. Berg throws the ball out there where Kroner gets it. Tosses it about 2 feet to Cronin, who rubs it up a little bit. Then they do a juggling act. Joe tosses it into the air and bats it over to Kroner. Kroner bats it into the air once, catches it, and then throws it back to the pitcher. Throws back to his position. And Russell is right on the rubber, ready to go again in the last half of the fifth inning. Russell getting his time. Starts to wind up. Pitches. And Haas, the first hitter, hits a slow bounder down to Cronin, who gets it, throws the first, and the mule is out for the first out in the fifth inning. That brings Zeke Benura to bat again. Zeke with a home run and a walk so far this afternoon, and he's been in a great hitting spree the last several days, practically for the last week. After having trouble for a while, he's really been going good lately. Stops to rub dust on his hands, then smooths out the dirt in the batter's box as he steps up the plate. Starts to wind up, throws, and the hitter hits a hard bounder, and it goes right through Werber. And Werber, after grabbing for the ball and not finding it there, throws both arms in the air as though in dejection. Now, how could anything like that happen? And as a result, the runner is on first base. Can you get a sign from that, George? Haven't had any sign relayed to us yet as to whether they're going to call that a hit or an error. They finally, apparently, decided to hit up there in the press box. And it puts Benura on first base with one out of the fifth inning and Appling at bat. He throws the first, as I said, and then he pitches one over the heart of the plate about waist high, and it's one strike on Luke. One strike to count. Russell swings around again. He turns and throws the first base again. The runner's back. But he's ready to pitch now, throws, and Luke started to get out of the way of that one after starting a swing, but it hit the bat and went foul and bounded right into the Boston dugout, and it's two strikes. Now Russell throws again, and it's a pitch behind inside for ball. So it's one ball and two strikes. One and two on Appling. He hits the next one, throwing to right field for a base hit. And Benoit stops at second as the ball is fielded fast. Well, Zeke got a little bit too ambitious yesterday on a ball hit out in that direction and was an easy out at third base. So Zeke wasn't taking any chances that time. He really started to stop long before he got to second base. So it's runners on first and second with one out of the fifth inning for the White Sox. And now Berg and Cronin over there to talk to Russell at the mound. Moe's coming running back to the plate again. And the Red Sox again warm somebody up in the right field bullpen. Came Mr. Wilson, I believe. And Sinatra really helped. Little genie Sinatra, I think. Well, Hayes is up there now. And the pitcher takes a look at first base. Back at second. Back there again. Pitches. And Hayes fouls this ball back into the second deck down in front of us, and it's strike one. One strike to count. Pitcher rubs that ball up a little bit, uses the rosin bag to dry his hand, and steps onto the rubber again. Back at second base, pitches, and it's a ball that's over the plate but too low, and so the count is one and one. One ball and one strike on Hayes. Waiting there again, takes a look around, back at the men back of him, then turns around, faces the plate again, swings around, he has a sign, pitches, and Jackie swings here to drive into left field. Left fielder's coming in fast, but he can't get it. Drops out there for a base hit. The left fielder throws into Werber. The ball gets past him, and it's recovered fast by Russell, who chases Appling back to second. But one run scored on Hayes' long single to left. Benora scored. Give the Sox a 3-1 lead. And Appling stops at second base. White Sox still have runners on first and second with one out, one run home, and Dyke at bat. Pitcher throws now to Jimmy Dyke to take the pitch inside and blow for ball one. One ball called. One ball called, and the pitcher ready out there again. Takes another look back at second, pitches, and Dyke takes a strike. A good one over the inside corner about knee high. Dyke turns around, looks at the umpire on that, but that ball was one of those tantalizing things. He's probably telling the umpire, how did he make it to hang over that corner so low? But it was right in there where it just barely was a strike, but a good one. One and one to count. Russell throws again, and Dyke twists away. After starting to swing, he had to twist away to take a low one inside for ball two, and it runs the count to 2-1 on Dyke. Two balls and one strike. Gets his sign again, swings around once more, and throws, and Dyke swings in a high fly into short center field. Center field is coming in under it. He waits for it now and makes the catch, throwing hard to second base, but Appling was back there. So it's two out of the fifth inning for the White Sox. They still have runners on first and second with one run home. They're leading the Red Sox 3-1, and the man at bat is Luke Sewell, the White Sox catcher. Sewell's waiting there. Russell's taking quite a lot of time deciding what to pitch to him. And now he hits the next one, a baller down past Werber. Werber tries to get it, just barely tags it. And one run scores, and the runner from first gets the third, and the batter reaches second base as Manush gets the ball and throws it in to third base. I believe they'll call that an error, or hit, I mean, because the ball was pretty well hit. Still, Werber had his hands on it, so we're having Eddie here check up to make sure whether it was a hit or an error. It's a very hard hit ball, and as a result, the runner from second scored. Appling scored. Hayes went to third, and Sewell went to second on the throw-in. Now with runners on second and third, two out, two runs home in the fifth inning. Kane, the pitcher's at bat, hits the first one, a high fly into center field, but the center fielder's under it and makes the catch for the third out. Ending that inning, Kane bats left-handed, and he just looped that ball in there. Eddie comes back with the word that it's called a base hit on Sewell that time. Really was a hard hit ball past Werber. He just barely tagged it, and it scored Appling from second base. Give the Sox their second run of the inning. So it's two runs, four hits, and two men left on base in the last half of the fifth inning. And again, for just a moment, we return to the studio.
Be sure and send in a request card for your copy of the 1936 Texaco Baseball Scorebook. By giving you this book, Texaco makes it possible for you to keep your own play-by-play record of the game. Hal Totten's own personal system of scoring is clearly explained, and there are plenty of blank score sheets for you to use. You'll find a wealth of other interesting baseball between the covers of this book. Here's all you have to do to get your free copy of the 1936 Texaco Baseball Scorebook. Just go to any Texaco service station and ask for a request card. Write your name and address on the card, stamp it, and drop it in the mail. Don't delay. Send in your request card today. And now back to Comiskey Park for the continuation of the baseball game, brought to you by permission of the Chicago White Sox and the Boston Red Sox to stimulate interest in our national game and in your local team. Take it, Al.